This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Brisky,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
It's interesting to see some of the former almost, you know, cult members that were, lining up with them for quite some time when they take the stand. We saw it in Lori's trial, and we're starting to see it here in Chad's. It's got to be a hard thing to kind of wrap their own minds around, because they were prey to that sort of thinking, and now they're seeing it all laid out in its pure, crazy glory. How do you process something like that if you're one of those people today?
You know, it's hard to be in the mind of someone else, but... And again, our limited optic we get, because the information we get in is from what we see on social media and the news. But from what I've seen and what I've seen during Lori's trial, the people that were testifying and being part of that cabal of hers, is they are still kind of bought into the methodology and thought process to a point, not to the point of killing people, you know, but underlying that belief system of dark spirits and all that, and dark energy and all that, they seem still pretty involved in that. That's why their credibility got assaulted a bit. And I think it's going to happen here as well, because their religious belief system is still intact, because we as human beings, again, this goes to one of Robert Greene's great books, The Laws of Human Nature, we consume information that validates our own self-opinion ourselves. You know, news organizations put out information that validates their own opinion as a news organization, and the opinions of the people consuming it. That's why we get in these echo chambers. And so these people that were part of this belief system of theirs is in their own echo chamber, and they do not want to believe that they were involved with any wrongdoing whatsoever. Our brains do not want to process that. So they're going to rationalize their behavior up to a certain point. And yes, they're saying Lori should never have done this. Chad should never have done this. But below that, it's still okay.
And that's interesting, because you're exactly right. We see that with a lot of these people, where it's like, okay, well, Chad and Lori were bad ones, but the principles to which they came to us on are still okay, because we believe that still. And if somebody else presented it, maybe didn't kill their kids, we'd still be kind of on that path. Why is it that some are able to walk away from that and say, yeah, this was messed up, I was thinking wrong, and others, yeah, they can't process it. Their brains won't let them go there. Why is it such a difficult hurdle for some to wake up and accept that, and others just, I mean, it seems virtually impossible, even when you have hard evidence directly in front of you. You know, the sky is blue. No, it's green. Like, no, it's clearly blue. And they just, are they thinking it's still green? Or what is going on with that? We see it in more than just this case. We see it in our society every single day, where facts don't seem to register, I guess, the way they once did with people.
Human beings are very complicated people, but at the core, we still just want simple needs, wants, dreams, and aspirations to be satisfied, and that is we want to belong to meaningful groups and organizations, and we want to be valued by those groups and organizations. And in these cases that we're seeing, that cult-like mindset is satisfying that need up until the point where it starts breaking the law and you start killing people. But that's still that need to be valued, seen, and heard. If people are feeling wounded, disenfranchised, whatever traumas they went through earlier in life, you know, if you're looking at Freudian, you know, types of development, it's part of their lifelong behavior arc. And so getting outside that behavior arc requires a major spike and a major event. This could be, like you're just insinuating there, a major event that creates a shift in how they're seeing the optic of the world. But it takes a lot of healing from that point to do that. And a lot of the tough work that needs to be done is to be able to look in the mirror and say, I was wrong. And so for people that are fragile to begin with, that need that kind of validation that this cult-like mindset was giving them, to have the courage to look in the mirror and pound on yourself even more, saying, I have to shift. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of loving critics. It takes a lot of self-awareness. It takes a lot of mindfulness. And a lot of people don't hit that a lot in life. And so that's why it's challenging, because human beings, there's simple motivations, but complex implications.
Do we have more fragility in our society today than ever before? It seems like in mass, people are so fragile and can't have their ideologies challenged the way that I don't know. It seems society didn't used to be like this, where it was just such narrow mindsets and nobody's going to crack that no matter how off the thinking is.
You know, you saw me on the side here. I was just pulling up. It's the timing is really good on your point, as always. And I just got done reading a good book called The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. Mm-hmm. And it talks about just this. As a society, for hundreds of thousands of years, we developed because of our ability to deal with discomfort and our problem-solving innovation and ability to overcome and live in discomfort was really, really resilient. That's how we survived as a species. Well, we got so good at making ourselves feel comfortable that a lot of people have lost that ability to do that. And psychologically, it damages us. We are actually the most healthy emotionally and psychologically and internally, spiritually, whatever you want to call it, when we are constantly facing challenges, overcoming those challenges, and moving on to the next one. We love setting a bar, hitting that bar, and then we get bored. Boredom actually reaches us for the next one. That's actually what healthy people do, is we're constantly striving to improve our situation. And in this society where we're at, in our current generational place in the world, there's so much abundance of comfort and a lack of an ability, as we've said numerous times, a lack of ability to problem solve. People go from 0 to 100 and just don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it. And then when you compound that with a term I recently came across, not helicopter parents, but snowplow parents, mm-hmm. where they plow the way in front of the kids so that they don't have any challenges or crises until they actually hit their 20s and 30s. And then they, like we've seen, they're going from 0 to 100. They don't know what to do. They freak out.
Yeah, that's a very...
I think it is a problem.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. Snowplow parents. It's so true. And yeah, then you have like nobody can handle any sort of anything when they are reaching it. Where in those developmental years, that's when you should learn it. That's when you should be getting through the ones that you can easily make it through and you can have mom and dad to rely on. But then you're out there an adult and you're clueless because mom and dad kept plowing it. And some keep plowing it till they're dead and the kids are 50, 60 years old. Where do you think it goes from here with Chad Daybell's defense? Because obviously there's been some pretty damning things that have been put out here. How do you recover from this if you're John Pryor and trying to argue on his behalf?
That's a great question, Tony, because I really thought they were going to hit hard, like we said before, the manipulated lover, the manipulated boyfriend, it's all on Lori, but this really undermined their ability to do that. So I don't know what they're going to shift to. I don't know if they're going to try to double down on that again. Although if you keep providing text messages like this and testimony like this, that's going to go nowhere with the jury. So it'll be interesting to see what they do pivot to. I'm not quite sure what they do.
Yeah, everything that they may try to argue, there's a counter for it, and it's pretty solid based on
their own words. Solid.
Yeah, their own words are coming back to haunt them.
When I read that and how they had thousands more, you know, the FBI agent that was up there testifying, I was like, wow, that is really undermining any defense that they had that I thought they were going to be using. Because without that, we even said that in the last show, I don't know what else you would do except do that. And I thought it was going to be a solid way to go about it because of the way he was portrayed and the way he looks and the way the whole thing. But he just hosed himself really bad.
And the thing is, it's not like the defense didn't know that this material was going to come up. They would have seen that in discovery. Yeah. It's not like they were like blindsided. Hey, here's a surprise piece of evidence. That's not how trials work. They would have known that this was in the revolver of the prosecution here and ready to be shot out at any time. I don't know. I'm guessing John Pryor just has no clue what to do with something. I don't think anybody would have any clue how to do anything with this.
Well, and therein lies why, you know, a number of weeks ago when he tried to recuse himself and get out of being the defense lawyer, and we're yes. like, now we know why. There was nothing to work with here.
100%.
Sick of the ads?
We opt too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.